like to start the message this morning with a little survey, and I'm not actually going to ask for you to show hands or to lock in your vote, but you can just think in your mind. I've got a couple items here. One of them is a stool. And my question for you is this a good stool? Is it a good stool? So you can, if we were in a smaller group and had more time, we might go back and forth a little bit, but just think to yourself, good stool, not a good stool. That's one item. We've got a pillow here. Is this a good pillow? Now, on one hand, I'm tempted to say, don't judge this pillow, because this is my pillow from home. No, don't judge our pillow. But do you think it's a good pillow? I heard that yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. So some of you might say, you know, well, it all depends. It depends what we're thinking about, what we're talking about. I mean, we could talk about, are these things well constructed? We could talk about, are they durable? I mean, have they been around for a little bit and look like they've got some life left in them that could make them good? Are they attractive? I mean, is the wood pattern, the stain, oh, a few scratches on here, so I don't know if that's good. The color scheme, I mean, does that make it good? Some of you might reserve judgment. You know, like, it's one thing to look at them from afar. It's another thing to actually, like, you know, sit on it and see, does this thing hold your weight? I mean, is it good in that sense? Or you know, this pillow, like, if you lay your head on it, I mean, does it have the right blend of firmness and softness? It's not too coarse. It's not too hard. It's not too mushy. You could assess it that way. You might say, it's fine if it looks good, but if you can't actually use it for what it was intended for, then could you really call it good? Now, I asked for a couple volunteers, and I'll invite them to come up right now. We have Dan and James here who are joining me. I didn't tell them why I wanted them to come up front. So, you know, this could be fun. We could do anything right now. But my question is, are these good people? Are they good? Are they good people? Maybe we should take a vote on that one. I don't know. And again, you might say, well, it all depends on what we're talking about. I mean, are we talking about, are they good looking? Are we talking about, are they, oh, I missed that one. Are they healthy? I mean, are they kind of well built and put together? I mean, are they good in that sense? We could talk about character. Are they people of integrity and wisdom? Does that make them good? What makes them good? It really all depends on the definition and the criteria. Thank you very much, guys, for being my object lesson. Better have them sit down before they do something, you know. We're in week 7 of a series that we're calling Locally Grown, where we're reflecting together on what qualities are produced inside of us, kind of the locally grown produce inside of each one of us when God's Spirit is inside of us. And to remind you of the list of qualities that we're looking at, we've been looking in Galatians chapter 5, this list that Paul, writing to Christians in the first century in the province of Galatia, this list that he gives them, this locally grown produce that grows inside followers of Jesus. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. We've been moving through these things. We've been talking about what each of those words means. We've been looking at how Jesus exhibited them. And then we've been talking about what does it mean to cultivate each one of these qualities inside of us. And every week, what I've tried to do is take you back to the original Greek that the New Testament was written in, and to look at the word as the recipients of the original letter that Paul wrote would have understood them. What does the word mean? How would they have understood it? And then that forms kind of our springboard to talk about the quality and what it looks like in each one of our lives. So the quality today is this quality of goodness. What makes something good? What makes people good? Well, the original word in Galatians 5 that's used there, that is translated in our Bibles as goodness, is agathosune. It's used four times in the New Testament, and each time it's translated goodness. Root word is agathos, which also means good and is usually translated as good. Just interesting little note here, the word or the name Agatha comes from that Greek word meaning good or goodness. Isn't it about time that the name Agatha came back into fashion, don't you think? Agathos. And as I kind of dove into what this word means and the parts that make it up, I'm going to give you kind of my best definition for what this kind of goodness actually is. And here it is. Goodness, defined according to this word, is consistency and sincerity in charity. Consistency and sincerity in charity. Now, let me pull that apart. That's some big words linked together. So let's talk about them. Goodness is consistency. And we could talk about consistency in a number of ways. To be consistent in the sense of goodness is to be consistent with the purpose for which something was created. So is it consistent with what it was made to do or to be? If I were to loan you my lawnmower, and you were to come back to me then, and you were to say, this is not a good lawnmower. I mean, I used it in my living room, and it did not do a good job on my carpet. You know, I would say the problem is not with the lawnmower. I mean, you didn't use it consistent with its purpose. So goodness is to be consistent with the purpose. That's how you one way that you assess the goodness. You could also talk about consistency in different situations. So is it the same from circumstance to circumstance, or does it change in one situation or another? A similar word would be the word integrity. We talk about integrity, and you know, we usually mean as somebody honest, but integrity is a bigger picture than that. Integrity really just means wholeness. It means that something is not fractured, it's not split. We're not talking about divided loyalties where you're being pulled in different directions. We're not talking about being two-faced, about being one way in this situation with this person, being the opposite in another situation with another person. We're talking about consistency. We're talking about integrity, the same whole, the whole way through. Consistency. And that consistency is goodness. And that flows into the idea then of sincerity. It's consistency and sincerity. It's honest. It's genuine. There's no deceit. There's no pretense. There's no hypocrisy. You're not one way inside and another way on the outside. The same the whole way through. Goodness is sincerity in the sense that it is inner goodness. That the thoughts, the ideas, the motivations inside are good. And then they have an outward expression in the way that we talk, in the way that we treat people, that is good. Consistency and sincerity revealed in charity. Now, sometimes when we talk about charity, we think of, you know, it's like financial generosity toward someone. But I'd like to broaden the picture of charity. I mean, charity is really just an expression of love toward others. So it could absolutely include financial generosity, but it could include giving of time. giving of abilities and of strength, giving of encouragement. Charity could include generosity of spirit, a willingness to share tangibly with someone in need, to be helpful. It's generous action. It's conduct that cares for another person. That's charity. And when we are sincerely and consistently charitable, we are good. You know, we say Bob is a good person. And if I'm telling you about Bob and I say Bob is a good person and you say, well, why do you say that? What am I going to do? I'm going to tell stories probably about, well, in this situation, Bob did this. I'm going to talk about what he did. If a teenager is going out with her friends or his friends, and the well-meaning parents say, now be good. They probably don't mean be good in your heart, right? I mean, they mean be good in your actions, behave. If a criminal says, but you know, deep down, I'm a good person. I mean, for this kind of goodness, we could argue with that. I mean, we could make the case that there is no such thing as being good deep down if it's not expressed in some way. And if it's not expressed consistently, and if it's not expressed sincerely. That is this quality of goodness. It is not just keeping rules. It's not just staying in bounds. This kind of goodness is not just not being bad. I mean, you can't just, you know, sit totally quiet on a chair and say, there, I'm good. Because it's consistent, sincere, charitable action. It's lived out. Jesus reveals this goodness all the time, and he talks about it often. If you go through the Gospels, you'll find Jesus talking about good gifts and good trees and good fruit and good treasure and good words and good food and good soil and good hearts and good people. But probably the most common reference to good for Jesus and others is good deeds, is good works, is doing good. And so I want to take you this morning to a scripture passage where we see Jesus both talking about goodness and acting in goodness. And we want to unpack a little bit more what this looks like in our lives. And so Mark chapter 3 is where I'm taking you this morning, the Gospel of Mark, second book of the New Testament, Matthew, then Mark. At the tail end of chapter 2 in Mark, Jesus' nemesis, the Pharisees, have just yelled at his disciples for working on the Sabbath. And as they were walking through a field, they ate some grain, they picked some heads of grain, and they ate it. And the Pharisees said, that's work. That's not allowed. I mean, the Sabbath day is, it's Saturday. It's the day of rest in the Jewish law. They should not do it. And that theme continues in chapter 3. Verse 1. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. Then Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed in their stubborn hearts, said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. So let's dive into this story. Fairly straightforward seeming, simple story about healing. Understand, first of all, the Pharisees' concern. I mean, they were concerned about the Sabbath laws. That is, taking every Saturday for worship and rest. And that was a good concern for them to have. I mean, to their credit, they're concerned about the keeping of the Sabbath. You see, the Sabbath laws were some of the laws that set Israel apart from the nations and the people groups around them. It made them distinctive. Other nations and people groups around them, I mean, every day was the same. They didn't treat one day of the week as separate or set apart. So this was a marker, a specific marker of their faith. And so it's good that the Pharisees were concerned about it and how it was kept. What the Pharisees did is they took it too far. Because they said it's not enough to say that, you know, this one day is set apart and it's a day of rest and worship. I mean, what really is rest and what really is worship? And, I mean, we need to know exactly what those things mean, and we need to spell it out in detail so that we can make sure that we're keeping it. And so they overlaid rule upon regulation, upon ritual, and they identified 39 types of work that were not allowed on the Sabbath, because we've got to know what we're not supposed to do. And so they had these types of work and really split it finely. For example, if you cut your finger, you could bandage it to stop the bleeding, but you could not put ointment on it, because that, you know, or antiseptic or whatever, you can't do that, because that is work. You can stop it from getting worse, but you're not allowed to do something to make it better. I mean, life-saving medical treatment, you can do that on the Sabbath. You can save somebody's life, but that's the only kind of medical treatment that's allowed. And so they sliced it up very finely. They come to this story, and they're watching to see if Jesus is going to break the Sabbath according to their traditions. Now, there's an ironic thing here about this story, and that is these Pharisees believed in Jesus' power to heal. Did you catch that? I mean, they know that this man is in the synagogue, this man with a shriveled hand, and they believe that Jesus could heal him, and so they're kind of waiting to see, what's he going to do? I mean, his life isn't in danger. So technically, according to their traditions, Jesus should not heal him. I mean, he was likely suffering to some degree. I mean, with a shriveled hand, probably affected his ability to have a livelihood. But to heal him would be unnecessary work, as they saw it. So they believed in his power to heal. They just didn't believe that he was who he said he was. They didn't believe he was from God. They didn't trust him or follow him. And they're waiting to spring this trap. And I love Jesus' response. I love the fact that he technically, by just about any definition, did not do work. I mean, he did not touch the man. He did not prepare any ointment. He didn't administer any medical treatment. He didn't even issue a command of healing. Like, he didn't say any words that they could identify that healed him. All he did was he had the man stand up and stretch out his arm, neither of which is work for Jesus or the man. And when he stretches out his hand, it's healed. Jesus healed without working, and good was done. But you see, Jesus is angry, and he's deeply distressed. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. I think one of them is simply this: with all apologies to cleanliness, goodness is next to godliness. Goodness. It's a quality of God's. We go back to that definition that I gave you of this kind of goodness. God is consistent. John writes that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. He is consistent. He is sincere. He doesn't say one thing in one place and then contradict himself somewhere else. Whatever he says today is true tomorrow. He's consistent and sincere, and he's charitable, acting for the good, for the flourishing of others. It's a godly quality. And so Jesus is naturally frustrated when these people go counter to it, when they distort God's law. Because, you know, the Old Testament laws, they don't say that you can't help on the Sabbath. They just say that there should be no regular work on the Sabbath. So there's no law of God against compassion. In fact, dedication to God should always promote and never prevent helping someone. And throughout the Old Testament and New Testament, throughout the whole Bible, prophets and teachers emphasize that rituals and ceremonies and acts of worship and personal piety that are divorced from compassion and mercy are reprehensible to God. And in fact, the Pharisees' rules and their whole attitude go against the point of the Sabbath. The intent of God in giving a Sabbath to his people was not to create this heavy artificial structure that they had to support. It was to restore the weak. It was to replenish the drained. It was to repair the broken. It was not just about people observing and honoring it. Jesus makes this point the chapter before in the previous story. In chapter 2, verse 27, he says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It was for the good of people, not to make their lives heavier or harder." You can make a case that healing the man with the shriveled hand was actually what the Sabbath is all about. And even you could infer from what Jesus says that to not help him would have been evil. And so I might say it this way: good works ripple out of rest and worship. They don't stand in the way. Our need for rest and our need for worship never stands in the way of good works. But they flow easily from one to the next. Jesus uncovers the reality that the Pharisees' hearts are as shriveled as the man's hand. I mean, they see this man as just a test case. I mean, he's kind of bait for a trap rather than a real human being with real needs. And you know what? The real sin is not working on the Sabbath. It's failing to see this man's worth as a child of God, made in the image of God, and celebrating with this one who is finding new joy and freedom on this Sabbath day. And Jesus prophetically calls out their sinful intent. He says, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" Two verses later, Mark says, immediately, presumably on that same Sabbath day, they are now plotting to do evil, to kill Jesus. And there's a challenge for us as well. When we think about this tension between rest and worship and good works, I like the way author Sky Gitani says it. He says, "If you ever find yourself using the Bible as an excuse for apathy or inaction in the face of suffering and injustice, you should be alarmed. It's a clear sign that you've departed from the way of Jesus to follow the path of those who killed him." Now, I assume that none of us would say, "I want to be apathetic. I want to be inactive." We all want goodness. How can we begin to cultivate it in our lives? Let me offer you three suggestions. One is to let rest and worship propel you toward good works. Let rest and worship propel you toward good works. Sometimes we have a way of splitting these things up as if they are entirely different categories. I mean, there's rest and worship, and there's good works. And one of them is passive, and one of them is active. And there's a season where I immerse myself in one, and then there's another season where I immerse myself in the other. But we should always have both. It's both and. We rest, and it prepares us for work. And we work, and it culminates in rest. And we worship God, which leads us to active good works for those that God loves. And as we work for others, we honor God. And there's this healthy rhythm, this back and forth flow between the two. They're not mutually exclusive. One of the measures of goodness, back to where I started this morning, is something fulfilling what it was created for? Is it accomplishing the purpose? And, I mean, throughout the scriptures we see, from the very beginning, God created people, human beings, to image him in the ways that they cultivate creation and care for one another. He saves people from their sins so that it will lead to good works prepared in advance for them to do. And so absolutely, take time for rest and worship, and let them open your eyes to the opportunities to do good around you. Secondly, let your light shine authentically. Jesus used those words to his disciples, Matthew 5. He said, "Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Now, there's an implication there that shining our light shouldn't just happen when there are people around to see it. I mean, you think about a light that's shining, I mean, however dark or bright it is around the source, I mean, when a light is shining, it is shining. And so, goodness is this consistency, it's this integrity, that it's the same inside and out, it's the same here and there. And so, we shine the light of our good deeds, not just in some situations, not just for some people. I mean, that would be inauthentic, that would be hypocritical, that would be disingenuous. That's why Jesus indicated in our story that, you know, there's never a bad day to do good for someone else. So, come to church on Sunday, prepared not just to worship, but come prepared to do good. And everywhere else you go, in every other opportunity, be prepared to do good. Be alert. Seek opportunities to shine the light where it is needed. But of course, being consistent can be difficult, right? To be consistently sincere all the time can be difficult. And so, I come back to this. Let the good shepherd tend you. The first century Jews would have been very familiar with this image of leaders and teachers as shepherds. The question is, are they good ones or not? Jesus says in John 10, "I am the good shepherd." How does he express that goodness? The good shepherd, he says, lays down his life for the sheep. You see, left to ourselves, we are not good. We are inconsistent. We are at times insincere. We are frequently uncharitable. Left to ourselves, We are at best mixed bags. You know, with hints of the goodness that we were created for amidst all kinds of distortions that come from the way that we are bent in on ourselves, from the distortions of sin. But Jesus was good for us. He was the good shepherd. He is the good shepherd. Lays down his life for the sheep. He did what we could not do. He lived a perfectly good life. He died. He was raised again. And now we can die to ourselves. We can have his new resurrection life coursing through us, enabling us to live the kinds of good lives that he calls us to. Have you received the goodness of the shepherd, the good shepherd? Are you receiving it continually to help fuel yours? How do we know if a thing is good? Well, it all depends, right? How do we know if people are good? How do we know if we are good? Well, the answer that Jesus would give, the answer that Paul and Peter and all the followers of Jesus would give is we will know that we are good if we are producing acts of kindness and compassion and generosity toward others consistently, sincerely, in ways that start with an inner goodness, with an inner light that is the light of Jesus Christ, transforming us and making us good. Can we ask him together to help us grow in his goodness? I want to invite you to pray with me. And maybe you're aware this morning in a specific way of how not good you are on your own. And so I'd invite you to confess that before God and to invite his goodness to do its work in us. Lord, thank you for the goodness that you show us. You are good all the time. All the time you are good. May we experience that goodness. We confess that on our own we are not good. Or at best we are only good sometimes. But would you, in the goodness, Jesus, of your sacrificial death on the cross and your resurrection life and power, would you do a work in us? Do your good work in us to make us good in ways that we cannot be on our own. Good Shepherd, tend us so that our lights can shine, so that we can be motivated toward love and good deeds, as you call us to. Amen. The song that we're going to end with is not a song for you to sing, but it's a song for you to listen to and to follow the words of. It's a song called Tend, and it's all about allowing God to tend us in these ways. So I invite you to sit and reflect as the worship team leads us.